From Cerevel Therapeutics, this is the Cerevel Drug Hunters Podcast. Now here is your host, Cerevel's Chief Scientific Officer, Dr. John Renger.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's podcast on CNS Drug Hunters. My name is Dr. John Renger, and I'm Chief Scientific Officer at Cerevel Therapeutics. This podcast series is dedicated to exploring in detail the inner workings and the motivators for driving the commitment of brilliant and talented CNS drug hunters that have found a career path through Cerevel Therapeutics with our laboratories and offices located in Cambridge, Massachusetts. This is a rare opportunity to get inside the heads of the people who are ultimately responsible for bringing important new medicines to individuals with debilitating diseases of the nervous system, such as epilepsy, Parkinson's, schizophrenia, and Alzheimer's. Join me now in speaking with Dr. Dave Stone, who's Vice President of Human Genetics here at Cerevel. So hi, Dave. Great to have you join us today for the discussion. Welcome to the podcast series, Unraveling the Mysteries of the Brain, and getting to better understand CNS drug hunters.
Thank you, John. I am thrilled to be here.
Great.
I can think of no better way to spend the rest of my afternoon than talking with you about the discovery of drugs and what we do here at Cerevel.
Great, Dave. So really appreciate your willingness to share your time with us today and some of your personal background so that all of us can better understand what it takes to be a drug hunter and what drives your satisfaction in pursuing this career choice. It'd be best to have you introduce yourself, including your title, what you do here at Cerevel, and specifically, and as simply as you can, in a way that everyone can understand what it means for you to be in the search for new drugs for patients with central nervous system disorders.
Thanks, John. So as you had mentioned, I'm the Vice President of Genetics and Target Identification here at Cerevel. So my role here at Cerevel is, you know, a lot of Cerevel was the pipeline that came over from Pfizer. But we don't want to just have the pipeline from Pfizer. We want to make this a company that's around for years, decades, right? So we need an early part of the pipeline. My role is to figure out what genes do we target? What programs do we start to build that first part of the pipeline to get new therapeutics to patients? And what do you do with target ID? What that means is, how does a drug work, right? You're taking a compound and you're affecting the activity of a gene. You might be turning it up, turning it down, turning it off, but we want to take human information, human data, be that genetics, other clinical trials, epidemiology, and find where these genes and their effects are tied to diseases or to changes in the body that could actually be useful to a patient. So then we find those genes, we find the ones that we want to change in one way or another, and then we target those. We make compounds that can turn them on, turn them off, modulate them in some way to the benefit of a patient.
Excellent. All right, Dave. So what we're going to do is, in the interest of getting you to give us a little bit of Freudian slippage here, we're going to ask you a few questions here, a rapid fire, and just answer off the top of your head. Don't overthink these. So if you could be anywhere right now, where would you be?
Hawaii, scuba diving.
Nice. All right. If you had to choose any other career, what you're doing, what would it be?
Oh, God. Are you kidding me? There is no other career.
Come on.
No. Any other career than there? Oh, my God. Other than this. Well, I sure as hell don't want your job. Anything else in the world. You know, I guess I could see myself as a physician, you know, dealing with patients. Not as much fun as making the drugs, but, you know.
All right. We'll go over that. What is one word or a couple? I'll give you a little flexibility that describes Cerevel.
Cerevel, smart, caring, dedicated, drug hunters.
Nice.
Amazing.
All right. Well, that was a few. We'll go with those. Who is the one person that you look up to most and that you would like to role model?
Well, that would be you, John.
I'm not going to pay you for these answers, no matter how good they come out. Anybody else?
Person I look up to the most that I would role model. Oh, boy, that's a tough one. I honestly have so many people in my life that I look up to. It would really be hard to narrow that down to one person.
Give me two.
Give you two. You're going to think I'm out of my mind. Someone that I really, really respected, she's gone now. My next door neighbor was a woman in her 80s when she finally passed away. She was like one of the first 100 women pilots ever. Went back to get her PhD when she was 65. The more we learned about it, the more I was like, oh, son of a gun, she was like a trailblazer. I get all choked up because she passed away a little while ago. But yeah, George is someone that I really, really respected, you know. And, you know, honestly, my father-in-law is an amazing physician. And I'll tell you, he's given me a lot of guidance on my career. So there's a couple of people, another generation that I could look up to and look at the stuff they had done, and I could always get good advice.
Excellent. Really nice. Yeah, you find your diamonds in your own backyard, yeah. They say. Alrighty, and this is the last one of these. So what is the best piece of advice that you've gotten in your career or in your life?
The best piece of advice I ever got. You know, it's interesting. It's not the advice I would give someone else, but old teacher of mine, Jim Barnett, who actually I still keep in contact with 30 years later as an undergrad. You get someone who's just straight with you, good person. And I remember him saying to me at one point, he said, look, you're a bright guy. You will always be competitive in science, but I'm not sure if you'll be outstanding unless you really learn to focus on the details. You're a big picture guy, and you get it better than anyone, but you gotta remember the details. You gloss over those. He said, if you can do that, I think you could be outstanding. And it's funny, because I was an undergrad when he told me that. I think back on that probably once a month. I'll be doing something, I'll be like, remember what Dr. Barnett said. Don't gloss over the details here. To make sure you're being very precise on this stuff. And I think it's funny, just one thing said back when I was, 21 years old, and here I am. We're not going to say how old I am right now, but let's say considerably older than 21. And I still think back on that all the time. That's probably the most influential advice I've ever been given.
It's a great one to share, so thank you for that. So could you tell us some of the highlights in your career experience that really shaped who you are today and has led you to join us here at Cerebell? And maybe focus on your youth and what it was that really got you curious to actually think about science as a career choice. And also maybe some of the educational experiences you've had in your either undergrad or graduate years that might have been highlights that actually helped also kind of shape who you are today.
Great question. So, oddly enough, when I was a kid, I had no interest in drug discovery. What I wanted to be was a wildlife biologist. I used to love that show, Mutual of Omaha. I don't know if you remember that. Marlon Perkins wrestling the lions and all. And I wanted to be Marlon Perkins so bad. I wanted to go to Africa. I wanted to wrestle lions. I wanted to chase rhinos. And that was, I went to college to actually do wildlife biology, right? My summer internship when I was in my junior year was not like what the folks are doing here. I was in India working on snow leopards, tracking them and, seeing what they ate and where they had been, all that. So I went to grad school originally in Alaska to work on wolves, right? So that kind of was my life plan. And you do that for a while. And I thought, look, this is important. I really do. Yeah, you care about what's going on with the animals. But then you see there are people suffering from diseases. You see there are issues affecting children, the elderly, et cetera. And I thought, you know what? Nothing against the animals. Love the animals. But I wanted to do something, still in science, but something where I thought this is going to have an impact on humans, especially humans that are suffering from diseases or something along those lines. I taught high school for a little bit, but then it's almost like chaos theory. One day I was a little bit early I was working on my master's teaching high school, and I'm going to the university, and the traffic was light. And I got there early, 20 minutes early, and I wandered into the anthropology department. Because I had time on my hands, started talking to a guy there who eventually turned out to be my dissertation advisor. I applied and got my PhD working in that was really when I got into genetics. That was more the mathematical modeling in genetics. I'm glad traffic was light that day. Who knows what I'd be doing otherwise right now? We wouldn't be having this conversation probably.
Great, man. That is a very unique and an amazing experience. So very unlikely course of events that led you here, but thank God the traffic was light. Maybe as a follow-up question, what is it that you learned about yourself as you've kind of, made those decisions to progress through your experiences of being in Alaska and chasing wolves and leopards and such? And then what is it that the experiences that you've had have either done to really reinforce the decisions that you've made since then? Or what is it that those opportunities that you've had kind of made you a better scientist today in the area that you've now chosen?
So I answer this kind of in two parts. So the motivation for doing this has always been you put the patient at the top of the algorithm, right? And I had gotten some good advice early on. Don't get yourself tied to a technique. Don't get yourself tied to a specific area of study. You look at what do you want to do for patients, and you follow the questions, and then follow the biology. And actually, when I was done with my PhD, This is another whole story. I managed to talk my way into getting a postdoc in molecular neuroscience. Now, I would like to point out at this point, I'd never had a single class in neuroscience, and I'd never had a single class in molecular biology. And there's another story behind how I managed to get into that. But what I found was I found that whenever you don't make a decision out of fear, it's one of the things I learned about myself. You say, this is a question, I want to figure this out. And I want to, you know, I want to answer this, and we're trying to, whatever it is, you know, to build a therapeutic. Don't worry about whether or not you are someone like you was supposed to be doing that. It's the most rewarding, the most fun if you say, I'm going to just take fear out of the equation. I'm going to give that a shot anyways. Let's try this. Let's do this. And even though I have no idea about molecular biology, sure, I'm going to do a postdoc in a lab that does that. Oddly enough, it went really well. And one of the things my postdoc advisor says, you've been unbelievably successful. He said it was the most successful postdoc he ever had in his lab. And he said it was just, you know, you're not afraid to do anything, to try anything. And it just seemed that is, if you're going to get into this field, you got to have that mindset.
Wow, really a great message. Can you tell me a little bit more about how you learned about Cerevel in particular? And then what is it that specifically piqued that initial interest in the company? What is it that really piqued your curiosity and your thinking about what made this a good opportunity as a next step? Because I've known you for a while. I know you were in a really good position in your previous life. How did you think about this opportunity, and what was it that really attracted you to this role?
I was enjoying working in Big Pharma. I was enjoying working at Merck, but I really did want to get into a startup environment at some point in my career. And again, little story for those of you listening about Dr. John Renger here, the way I actually heard about this, I came home from work one day, and I'm sitting at the kitchen table with my wife, and my phone bings, and it's LinkedIn, and I was like, oh, a message from John Renger. And she said, what does it say? And I said, I think he wants me to take a job. And I said, what did he say? He said, hey. And she said, you got that out of hey? That you think he wants to hire you? And I was like, Renger doesn't just say hey, you know. So I was like, hey, yeah, let's talk tomorrow, you know. So then I'm at work the next day. I have to go outside and hide outside the building so no one can hear. And she's like, hey, how you been? Oh, pretty good. How you been? He's like, all right, enough of that. Look, I'm going to this place called Cerevel. And I was like, okay, I got to look into this. So John and I, for those of you listening at home, John and I had worked together for about, 10 years we worked together. And I got to say, I trusted the work he did. I enjoyed working with him. And so I said, I'm going to look into this. I see this is the old Pfizer pipeline. And I didn't just come in without doing so. I looked into tavapadon, darigabat. I looked into the pipeline. And I was like, why the hell are they spinning this off? This is like, there's some really good stuff here. You know, I thought this could be really fun. I'm looking at the people John was talking to from Merck. I'm looking at the pipeline. I'm like, hey, I talked to my wife. And my wife is like, honey, you're like, your whole career has been leading up to this moment. You're out of your mind if you don't take this. So I was unbelievably excited. And the weird thing is, here it is 4 years later, and I have not been disappointed one bit. I am having the time of my life working here. Best team I've ever worked with.
I'm really happy.
You're tearing up there, but you're tearing up there, but John.
That's tearing up from my laughing, actually. But I appreciate that, and you're sharing our relationship. All righty. Let's change direction a little bit, Dave, if you don't mind. I think it would be helpful to share with the listeners a little bit about what is it that inspires you? What gets you up in the morning to come in? It's a really challenging career, as you mentioned, right? You know, like, we have to like make decisions without a lot of information. You have to come up with new targets for the teams here to work on. What is it that keeps you coming back every day, even when the odds for success are really stacked against us and every company that's trying to make a difference in neuroscience, really? But what is it that brings you in every day?
Yeah, so two things here. Number one, and I alluded to this before, you put the patient at the top of the algorithm, right? And you really know, you don't want to, I don't know, maybe some people, you don't care, you just want to make a name for yourself, you just want to, I don't know, be super wealthy, whatever. I don't know, I can't imagine looking back on my career when I retire at the age of 150 or whenever it is, that thinking that, you know, you haven't done something to make the world a better place and you haven't helped people. So it really is, you come in and you know every day you're not asking yourself, what the hell am I doing? You know what you are doing when you walk in here. You know what the goal is. And like you said, it's super hard. And boy, this is going to sound so weird. I mean, this is the ultimate job where you get knocked down 11 times and you get up 12, right? It is like, it's hard. And I tell the teams that I work with, it's supposed to be hard. There's a reason they give out Nobel Prizes for curing diseases and all that. This is supposed to be hard. But the weird thing is how incredibly fun it is. I mean, when people come in, that's usually what I want to see if we're hiring them. You know, you want to make sure this is going to be brutal, right? You're going to have things, you're going to try something, you're going to work on, it's going to fail, and you got to get back up and do it again. And is this the kind of person who's going to enjoy that, enjoy getting knocked down and saying, you know what? Okay, I got knocked down. Let's give it another shot and just continue to do that. I have no clue why that is fun. If you told me that would be enjoyable years ago, I'd have said you're out of your mind. But it is. Is it not giving up and just keep going after these big problems? It's like a calling. So how could you want to do anything else?
Excellent. So persistence pays off, sir. All righty. Creativity. As you know, probably as much as anybody that there is out there, we have to constantly come up with new ideas. We have to come up with solutions at the very leading edge of science. And it's not just once, right? It's not just like one simple answer where if you solve one question, that's it. There's always seemingly additional hurdles and other issues that arise. You have to try to outthink Mother Nature on so many different levels. Where does your creativity come from? And when you feel like you're really completely stumped, how is it that you go back and come at the problem from a new way, rededicate yourself, apply your talents, your experience, really to come up with those pathways to get either around or under or over the hurdles so we can find a way to get over the roadblocks and get these medicines to patients as quickly as possible?
Yeah, it is all about constant conversations with people about this. And again, this is something you can ask the people on my team. I am always trying to enforce and make sure. I don't care if you are C-suite, you're the CEO of the company, or you're a technician who's been here 2 weeks. I want to hear what you're thinking. I am not convinced good ideas only come from one place. And I think we're at our best as scientists when you get a group of people who care and you're throwing out ideas, because you may not have an idea right off the bat, and someone else may say a crazy idea that leads to another, that leads to another. And those conversations, though, when you just kick things around, you twist them, turn them upside down, and that if you do that enough, you're going to come up with a plan. You're going to come up with an idea. And what I think one of the most important things you can do in science when you're leading a team, it is just make sure people are not afraid to talk, no matter who they are, that they're willing to speak up. And when you have people that are all talking like that, again, maybe that's where the fun is, you know, and you're just going through crazy ideas till one comes through and you're like, you know what, that last one wasn't so crazy. That's actually a good idea. Let's give that a shot. And I'd say that's probably where most of the time it comes from. There have been times, though, honestly, I'm not kidding. You know me, I'm kind of like Ahab with the whale here. Yeah. My level on dealing with Parkinson's disease, my obsession with it, when I'll be at 3 a.m., you know, and my wife is like, oh, you're up late. I could tell you were awake for 2 hours last night. What were you thinking about? She said, actually, you know, don't even tell me. I know what you were thinking about. You're thinking about Parkinson's disease. You're thinking about. But I've had ideas hit me at 3 a.m. I keep a pad of paper and a pen by the bed. And a couple of times, some things we've done here, which I'm not going to mention at the moment because I don't want you to know which ones they were, hit me at 3 a.m. And I'm like, I may not remember that. I rolled over and I wrote it down. Next day, I'm emailing, Socom, Phil, got an idea. We got to try this.
Yeah, that's cool, man. So this is a little bit of a dual answer question, so break these apart for me. But I'd really like to hear about what are your long-term goals? Obviously living to 150 is one of those. But other than that, both in terms of your career and then personally, what is it you're ultimately trying to achieve here?
Yeah, long-term goals. Really, and again, I think I hit on this already. By the time I retire, I want there to be something. I don't want just to put something in the clinic. I want there to be something that we worked on, preferably we came up with here, that is in human beings and giving them a benefit, right? That is in some way alleviating the symptoms of the progression of a disease. That is it. That is my long-term goal, career-wise and kind of also personally. You know, I mean, I joke around about, winning Nobel Prize or whatever. Honestly, I don't care about winning any prizes. I don't care if nobody knows who is behind the drug. We get that drug into people and it's working. I'm good.
All righty. So now that you've got the format here and clear, you're feeling free to say whatever you want today. So for those out there listening today, what is it that you want them to most understand about what it is that you do and that they would not either understand or appreciate. And they're reading, for instance, like the job description of what you do or your bio, you know, looking at the career of somebody that does genetics and target identification in the industry we're in. What is it you want those folks to come to grips with or get a better appreciation for?
Yeah, well, I do want people to know this is a very hard job. It is a very hard job, and you've got to be super committed to it. It is, for some odd reason, an amazingly fun job, too. Maybe that's just part of life. The things that are really hard tend to be the ones you enjoy the most. I think also sometimes, you know, we get knocked around a little bit in industry. But it's funny, you know, I honestly feel the most ethical people I've met in my life tend to be the industry scientists. These are people who really care. And if you don't know about something, it's kind of like, I don't know, it could almost be a caricature. You don't really understand what goes on. But it really is. It's like in industry, working on drugs, these are real human beings who really care, are putting in a lot of time, a lot of effort. And it's incredibly hard. You get knocked down a lot. But don't think we're not enjoying ourselves, because if you're not enjoying yourself, you're not doing it right. We're having a good time, too. And if you are smart and have an interest in curing diseases, you might want to check out the Cerevel website and see and apply for something on my team, because
always in search.
Yeah.
All right. You know what? We're gonna go off script here a little bit. And
we weren't this whole time.
Yeah,
there was a script.
No. I'm loving this so much. So I really enjoyed our time together, Dave, and really appreciate your being so open with us. I want to thank you for your time. I also want to thank you for being somebody that's really willing to be open and share personal experiences and perspectives with everyone that's listening. So I want to recognize how important your dedication is to discovering new medicines here at Cerevel and on behalf of patients, particularly, as you know, you love the Parkinson's patients that are relying on us to do our best work to get them treatments. I wanted to make sure that you know that there's a lot of appreciation for your efforts in bringing your best self to work every day and working hard and being resilient, as you've described, so that you can bring your talents to the mission that we have of bringing medicines to patients. And thanks, everybody, for listening in to today's podcast on CNS Drug Hunters, a podcast series dedicated to giving everyone a rare opportunity to get inside the heads of people who are ultimately responsible for bringing important new medicines to individuals with debilitating diseases of the nervous system. With that, be well, everyone, and I look forward to being with you next time. Now let's go find some drugs.